You're listening to the Bethel University Chapel Podcast, recorded from the Everstwar Chapel Fine Arts Center in Mishawaka, Indiana. Thanks for listening.
Dang. Thank you, Sean. Good morning, everybody. How are you? Are you? When I was shooting Walker, I went through a conversion. I was a very prodigal person. And I had to go through a divorce. And when I was healing, I had a lot of help. And one day I was driving to the set, and I had to go through a toll booth. Anybody from Texas here? Not too many? Yeah, well, Dallas has these toll booths you have to go through in the morning sometimes. And I used to have to go through this toll booth every morning to get to wherever the set was or the stage was. And while I was going through this healing, one morning I realized that I was a jerk going through the toll booth. And I wasn't acknowledging the human being that was taking my money. Just a person. And one morning this person said, "How are you?" And true as true can be, I said, "I'm blessed." Holy Spirit was in me, and I finally said, I spoke, and I said, "I'm blessed." And I realized that from then on, I realized then that from now on, that when people ask me how I was, and instead of saying "fine" or "you really don't want to know," or that I needed to witness simply and say, "I'm blessed." So now it's been about 20-something years. At my university, I don't know if you're experiencing it here, but there's no parking. So sometimes I get up really early and go to Mass at 6:45, and then I have the whole parking lot to choose where to park. But what happens is I get to pray before I go to school, right? So I'm like vibrating. So the administrative assistants and the early vice presidents that come in, they try to duck away from me because they know that when they get in the elevator, they're going to have to see and hear me say, "Hey, how are you?" "Fine, how are you?" "I'm blessed, thanks for asking." Right? It is, you try that sometime, and you see the reactions that you get from our brothers and sisters who are challenged. Or just say it to yourself in the mirror in the morning. Try to embrace the reality that we're here. So I want to thank you for the opportunity. I have some notes here. I was going to read you the whole play this morning, for those of you who aren't coming. But I trust that you'll all be in the seats, right? You'll all come and see your colleagues who are working very hard. We're all working very hard. It's a Russian play, so to learn Russian is really difficult. I'm trying these jokes out. Is this on? Maybe that's what it is. I do appreciate the opportunity to be with you again, share a bit of myself. 2:15. It seems like a long time ago. It seems like a long time ago I was here. And I just barely saw two of the actors that I worked with the last time. They're all grown up. I had hair when I was here the last time. But I'm doubly blessed. I need to share a little bit of truth with you, though. People are always, always surprised that this is not my thing. This is not my ballywick. I am not comfortable speaking in front of audiences. People are always surprised that actors don't necessarily do very well doing that. But I believe, I hope, I know, my parents really tried to raise me right. And you can't really say no to Vice President Sean when he asks you to do that. I mean, how are you going to say, no, I don't want to talk about why I'm blessed. I want to echo the truth that's gracing the Spiritual Life and Chapel webpage. See, anybody, you don't have to go to that, right? You know it's there. But it has a little saying on it, which I really appreciate. And I have certainly come to know that we are spiritual beings on a human journey. I appreciate that. That's something you should take a look at on that page. That's thought-provoking. And I also want to respond to President Chenoweth's charge in the first chapel. As he was finishing up his words, he spoke very strongly about speaking faith and reflecting on relationships. I teach you guys. Where I teach absolutely this age group, beautiful young men and women. So my full name is Clarence Alfred Gilliard Jr. I'm the first son, but the second child of Barbara Stanwyck Ballard, may she rest in peace, my mom is in heaven, and Clarence Alfred Gilliard Sr., and I look a lot like him now. He just turned 85 yesterday. Yeah, my daddy's 85, he's still here. In New Orleans, Louisiana, so I'm the second of six children, and I am Elena Castillo of Dallas, Texas, husband. And I'm sad because my family's not here. We've been traveling a lot because Daddy works a lot, and I try to put my family in my contract. But we homeschool, and yet we homeschool. So after 3 months on the road, producing and directing and acting this summer, she put the brakes on. She said, I got to take the boys home, put them in our house, and get them rebooted with the school. So you got to go. And so I'll meet them in New Orleans, but I miss my wife and my kids. Paul, my son, my oldest son, he's 28. He's a rifleman, Marine. He's transitioning to the United States Army. He's a soldier. I got a gorgeous daughter, Rachel. She married a 6'3" Irishman. Man, right? I call him my tall drink of water. I have to hug my son-in-law's chest. Right? And he's really, 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 really funny. But I don't allow him to know that I think he's really, really, really funny in my house. You don't do that as a father, you know. You gotta keep that down. But he's great. He loves Rachel. Maximilian Aloysius is 16, and he worked for me this summer in my play. I gave him a little cameo role, and he was very funny. But I wanted to strangle him. You remember when you were 16? You remember how you treated your parents when you were 16? He did that at home and at work. Peter is 12. I think he has a photographic memory. It's fascinating to know that your child has that kind of memory. And he's very kinetic, and he would play video games 24/7. He would. Gabriel, our baby, is 9. And all my kids are still virtually attached to Elena by umbilical cord. They're still babies. I don't count. And then we have one baby in heaven, Bernadette. I am surviving my second bout with colon cancer. So in the next 3 weeks that you see me, I won't be packing like Trivette. It'll be a little pump that I wear for 3 days, and that's really a lot of fun. Not. But it is what it is. So I'm living my 64th year on this earth. And this summer, I began, and now I'm in my 14th year as a member of the academic community at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And they awarded me what they call a faculty development sabbatical leave, because I said I was going to write a book. No, I am. Right? On acting. Right? So this term, I'm acting professionally, producing professionally, directing professionally, and co-writing a textbook on acting. So today, you're all witnesses to the reality that it is not always true that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Because I'm here. Oh, I've been thinking about this talk for a long time. When brothers and sisters get together and Jesus is in the midst, it's special. It's not like getting on the elevator and saying you're blessed and people go, blah, 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 blah. It's real. Real. And so I want to be present for you as the person that I am, in the capacity that I am. I am a teacher. You are students. So you're welcome to take out a notebook and jot some of this stuff down so that you see me. And you think I'm joking, but all the actors and those in my class, they know. They know I'm serious as a heart attack about this. But when artists, it should be this way, when artists speak, it's not for a massage of the cranium, of the brain. It's a conduit towards doing the art. We're just not showing each other how smart we are, how much funnier we are than the other person. We're going to put it into the medium, right? We're all artists in some capacity in our life, not necessarily actors or dancers or composers, musicians. You know, we're students, we're brothers and sisters, daughters and sons, friends, colleagues. And in that relationship, there's an art to it, to really be of service. That's what we do as artists. We give gifts to society, to the world. We give of ourselves. We sacrifice ourselves. The theologian A.B. Simpson, I've been reading him, and he has reminded me, because I'm a dinosaur and I do need reminding, that there is a pattern to follow a pattern to follow in my sufferings and challenges. It's Christ. It's there. He's here. Through it all. On the cross. Pretty simple. And Paul teaches in Galatians, I've been thinking about this, the virtue of humility, humble. The virtue of humility is not a threat to a young artist's self-esteem. To be humble is not a threat to your self-esteem. That as for me, this is Paul, it is out of the question that I should boast at all except of the cross of my Lord Jesus Christ. He through whom the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. So at 64 in the state that I'm in with the things that I have to do and get to do, my primary relationship has to be with a person, not an idea, not a philosophy. A person. Christ. That's when I'm operating on all cylinders. We are Christians, right? We believe in Jesus. We follow Jesus. We are travelers and not yet in our native land. And as President Chenoweth charged us, we speak faith. It takes courage. I know. But we are who we are. We're children of God. So, be you. Be you. No hurtful wound is merely random or meaningless. It's actually the goodness of God's providence, God's protective care, providence. And it makes our sorrows meaningful, makes the rough days a little brighter, and suffering always, always precedes glory. Can you imagine if you were living, if you're a roommate of Paul? Gosh, right? I wonder if he was like really clean. Like if he was straightening things out. Paul was a man, a major rock star. I bet he was messy though. For me, I have two offices. I do. And they're, I can't even describe how messy they are. But when I work, when I'm in my art, I feel like a sniper. Right? I can do it. Paul was a sniper. I have been crucified with Christ, he says, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. If we have been united with him in the likeness of his death, certainly we shall also partake in the likeness of his resurrection. That's the gospel. That's the good news. That's the truth. The truth. That's the truth. Our cross will be followed by a crown. We have a character in this Russian play. His name is Kulyigin. Is Kulyigin in here? No, he's graduated. That's right, he's an actor, but he's graduated. And he runs around entertaining because in 1899, I can't believe this, they didn't have cell phones and they didn't have Apple TV, they didn't have that stuff. So people had to talk to each other, sing to each other, dance with each other, right? So he recites Latin. He would get the... Is Rebecca here? And she graduated too. Resurrexit sicut dixit. Who's ever heard that? It's not 1899. Resurrexit sicut dixit. He has risen as he said he would. I gotta have that. It is the comfort of Peter's joy, resurrexit sicut dixit. It's the assurance of Paul, and it's the crown of Jesus' reward. See, that's the deal. This is a journey. To make this journey fulfilling, you got to realize that that's the deal. I think when I started to embrace, because I went into remission, and then the cancer came back. But when I started to embrace the fact that, and I'm not being disingenuous when I say this, that cancer isn't that bad. I'm not saying that. It's come to me, because Paul talks about it. Christ suffered on the cross. And to be a Christian, you don't get to pass go and not collect $200. You got to go that way. So I'm getting what I asked for in my relationship with Christ. Right? And I know you know this, but Paul... he had it rough, right? He was scourged, scarred. In the Philippian jail, his feet were in those stocks, those wooden stocks. 3 times he prayed, like Jesus, that God would remove his suffering caused by the thorn he bore in his flesh. His unnamed wound, which fascinates me, which God did not remove. That's why we're still talking about him today. He was such a stud. He did not remove it, and to which, like Jesus, he submitted his own will. He was scarred. A snake bit him, filled him with venom. I mean, this is crazy. So I'm getting off easy, in a sense. And just like Jesus accepted death with the cry, "It is finished," so Paul confronted his own martyrdom. His words, "I have finished my course." So I'm telling you where I'm at, spiritually. This is the story of the Master through the cross. So Sometimes, just recently, I've been reflecting on, you know what the cross was back then? What it's like? That's like the electric chair. That's what it was. Just kind of wrap yourself around that. So it's glorious in Easter for us when the cross is in, but you got to go back and you got to look at what it was culturally that Christ did for me, for us. Just reflect on that a little bit. And he reached the throne, and like him, our path to glory ever leads through this life, through death alone. My favorite actor is Mr. James Earl Jones. He's actually, I consider him a mentor. For those of you who may not know him by name, that's the guy, that's Darth Vader's voice. That's James Earl Jones. And I get to talk to him, honestly, whenever I get to be in town where he is. I shot this film in 1987 called Die Hard. Has anybody seen that movie? You've seen it? Good. Good. Keep watching it. Rent it, because I have three more boys to put through college. So I shot this film in 1987, and it was in the winter. It was real at Christmas time. It really was. As a matter of fact, the producer, Joel Silver, I remember going up to him and saying, because my birthday is Christmas Eve, and I said, Joel, are we going to have Christmas Eve off? He goes, no. I was going, okay, all right. So I worked Christmas Eve, then I had Christmas off, then I came back, kept shooting this film. And then in the spring, when we finished shooting the film, I got a phone call on my answering machine that we used to have in those days, right? Beep, one of those things, right? And it was John McTiernan, the director, his administrative assistant. And she said, John, why don't you come down? So Die Hard was at 20th Century Fox. She said, John wants you to come over to Paramount Studios, because he had shown a cut of Die Hard to James Earl Jones, who was shooting Hunt for Red October, right? And he went back to back. And he said, I want to meet this kid. I was like, what? So I hot-footed it over to 20th Century Fox. James Earl Jones is an extremely shy man, and he has had to overcome serious stuttering. He's like this consummate, he's a national treasure, but he's super shy. So I went over and I met him. So fast forward to 2014, and I'm at the university, and I'm in the hallway, and one of my colleagues comes up to me, and he says, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, did you see what James Earl Jones said about you in the paper? I said, what? So I went to the New York Times, and he was doing an interview, front page of the art section of the New York Times. I'm going to read this to you. I'm going somewhere with this. The question was, when you look at the scope of contemporary black cinema, do you feel you helped make it possible by breaking down barriers? See, when I was growing up, I was born in 1955. God bless you. Cowboy shows all over television. Populated television, but no black cowboys. The NFL, right? The biggest show in the United States, literally, National Football League. No black quarterbacks. That's how I started out, dreaming of being a cowboy and being a quarterback, but there were no black cowboys. There were no black quarterbacks. That's where this question comes from. So Mr. Jones says, I feel a great sense of pride, but I don't think I contributed anything to it, which is a joke. He said, my first impression of a breakout black character was in Die Hard, the black kid who played the hacker taking care of the control board downstairs. When you have black guys playing different kinds of roles, it's just sort of spreading the goodies, you know? I was like, what? What? So not only do I cherish the relationship that I've developed with him, but that validation is important in the classroom because it gives me street cred, right? You know what street cred is, right? You don't know what street, who doesn't know what street cred is? Street cred, I even looked the definition up. The dictionary says that if someone says you have street cred, they mean that ordinary young people would approve of you and consider you to be in some way part of their culture, usually because you share their views, which in the world of acting I do, right? As my actors already know, I am a super dinosaur. I can play a computer guy, but I know nothing about him. You Gen X's, there's these new distinctions now. Gen X, millennials, digital natives. For all you who are around my age, there's such a thing as a digital native. And that's the title for the most recent young ones who only live in the realities of HDTV, streaming video, and iPads. Wow. Wow. I could watch. I used to be able to watch a black and white TV, and if there was snow on it, I didn't care. I didn't care. I followed it. Man, the things you can Google with a phone right now. But I do share dreams with you. With you young artists. I dream just as much as you do. That's the business that I am in. I dream and I struggle to be successful, right? I'm hustling all the time. And I suppose that I explain myself to you in this way because I truly believe my DNA, if you will. If you examine me, you'll find out that I am very fortunate to have realized before it was too late that I'm doing what God wants me to do to cry the gospel. I am an artist because that's the way I can let my light shine. That's what I'm supposed to do. So that's what I teach. I teach what I do. When I introduce myself to my students on the first day of each semester, I ask them if they know what a tenured professor is. And I tell them that it means that somewhere on my campus, there's a spot that's reserved for me where my body will be laid to rest in the ground after I'm finished teaching my very last acting class. I have a place to get to be buried, right? At the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And that is because the university, after examination, has concluded that it's beneficial to the state of Nevada, to the community of Las Vegas, and to the greater society, in the long run, that I be free to examine and pursue what I determine is the virtuosity of listening for the truth, and that it might be a challenge to replace my particular ability to contribute to helping other students listen for the truth, but not just listen, but listen. Listen. And I'll bet you this is really why I'm just relentless about teaching and passionate about teaching now, because I'm concerned about how you listen. I'm 63 and God gives me these young kids in my house. And sometimes I'll leave the house and Maximilian will have his ears in, and I'll come back to the house and he'll still have his earplugs in, right? But he's not listening. You wouldn't know it, but I have so much more to teach you, but I've got to wrap this up. Let me see. What was that? No, I'm going to finish up. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. It's Friday. Next week, I'm going to make some time, and I'm going to sit over at that coffee grounds place. All right? And I've got some other things. Coffee grounds doesn't sound right. Right? Obviously, I wasn't on the marketing staff when we said, let's brainstorm about a time. Right? Okay, but I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to sit over there, and I'm going to bring these notes, and I'll make myself available. I just wanted to make myself available to a Christian college community as a follower of Jesus and an artist. And that's why I'm here. That's why I'm writing my book with these students and other students around the United States. So I've got a lot more to teach you. I'll be over there at Coffee Grounds next week with my notes. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Clarence.
Thanks for listening to the Bethel University Chapel Podcast. Subscribe to the podcast and get more information at chapel.betheluniversity.edu or check us out on the iTunes Store by searching for Bethel University Chapel.